Hello, you are listening to another episode of On The Topic, and this week I'm web-slinging in. I'm Dan.
And I'm going to be on the magic school bus and getting shrunk down to minuscule size, and I'm going to pop into your body, Dan. I'm Alex.
And this week we are going to revisit your favourite 90s kids' TV shows. We're digging back into that vault, and we're going to revisit some of our favourite cartoons from the 90s.
Well, yes, from the 90s, but also specifically from December 2019, Dan.
Yeah, pre-COVID.
This is volume one. We did a volume two, did we not?
No, we haven't done a volume what? Two yet. We need to, though.
There's all these things I seem to forget. Okay, we need to, because I've remembered loads more, like Captain Planet. Do you remember Captain Planet?
Yeah, classic, where they get all the rings and summon him.
Yeah, which
sounds really like, fucked up.
Yeah, sounds like something of the occult. But anyway, no, we're not talking about the occult. We're talking about, you know, some of our... And hopefully your favourite children's TV shows growing up. And there are some corkers in there. So you mentioned The Amazing Spider-Man?
Yes, we had The X-Men.
Ironically,
I remember more of yours than I do my own. You had Bar-Bar, didn't you?
I did.
Yeah.
Wow, Bar-Bar the Elephant. Yeah, that's a really odd one with the baddie rhinos. But yeah, Bar-Bar the Elephant. I had The Animals of Farthingwood.
Which is absolutely harrowing when we recapped on that.
Yeah, just a concept. Watership Down, I mentioned, which is the film.
Yeah, you did.
We had Sharky and George.
Yeah, that's a classic.
Very catchy.
Takes you back to 1992, if I recall.
Uh-huh.
Sharky and George.
Crime Fighters of the Sea.
There he is.
Da-da-da-da, they got the sax.
This is why he's the yin to my yang.
Yeah. It was great. And it was, we talk about all those things, and again, because, you know, we talk about this stuff. It's there's lots of talking about what we were doing and how we were watching it. You know, getting up in the morning, running downstairs, and you know, 5:15 in the morning, and popping on the TV. And you had those weird kind of TV cards, or sometimes TV hadn't kicked in yet.
Mm.
This is like terrestrial TV where you've got four stations.
You had that weird sort of it wasn't pixelated, was it? You had like the girl in the circle
the doll. Which again sounds quite ominous. But then come 6 o'clock, it would miraculously start and the programmes would be on. And there wasn't anything before then, listener. We sound really old, but there wasn't 24-hour TV.
Not like there is today.
No. So yeah, we talk a lot about, you know, what we were watching in the mornings and then specifically the weekends. And I think there's even a Batman, 1960s Batman.
Yeah.
With Mr. West.
Yeah. Oh my God.
Yeah.
Did Bedeverus mention Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles?
I'd like to say we did.
I'd like to say we did. If we didn't, then we certainly need to talk about in Volume 2. Transformers.
Yeah. Magic School Bus mentioned. Yeah. I mean, that's just nuts, though. Just a concept.
Alvin and the Chipmunks. Don't know if we mentioned them.
But it's all of those things, and a lot of them since been rebooted. You know, you see now Netflix CGI, and you're like, it's not the same, though, is it?
No.
It doesn't quite have that grainy kind of feel and nostalgia, obviously. Recess? I think you talked about Recess.
Yeah, I did.
Yeah.
That was really good. I mean, that was
proper
more sort
Nickelodeon,
of like
Disney.
Early noughties, if I remember. We definitely need to do Volume 2, because I'm sure there will be things that we've probably mentioned in the intro to this that we didn't talk about. Need to re-listen to the episode.
We do, and this is a perfect time, listen, actually, to get in contact and let us know. Socials will be in there, well, our website, on our Instagram, all our social medias. Go get in contact, let us know what you were watching when you were growing up, and we'll do a volume two. It's about time, Dan. It's been a good couple of years.
We should probably put those contact details in now, because what is at the end of this episode...
Who knows?
...is the old stuff.
Yeah.
So we're on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok and Threads, which is at On The Topic Pod. And we've got Gmail, which is onthetopicpodcast@gmail.com.
Or you can post a comment on our YouTube channel at OTTGITS, or just search On The Topic Podcast. You can leave a comment in the video chat, and we'll pick it up there.
Yeah, I feel like this should be an episode done sooner rather than later.
It's got to be done. But yeah, let us know. We're keen to hear from you. But otherwise, I'm going to grab my bowl of cereal and get all comfy in my place on the sofa. I've been Alex.
I'm going to go wake up my dad and tell him Transformers is on. I've been Dan.
And, well, we'll see you again in a couple of moments.
Let's dive in.
Hello, Razzers, and welcome to another episode of the Weekly Roundup. I'm Alex.
I'm Dan.
And, well, this week we are going to be talking about our favourite 90s cartoon shows.
We love a bit of nostalgia here at the Weekly Roundup.
We it's been said many a time by, well, just by us, that we love to bathe in nostalgia. Getting all the nooks and crannies under your arms, behind the ears, and fully embrace the trip down memory lane. And we'd like to invite you, the listener, to come along with us.
Oh, for sure.
So we're going all the way back to, well, we're talking about shows that we've seen in the 90s, so then some of them may have aired originally in the 80s, late 80s, but ultimately it's what we were looking at, what we were watching as we were growing up.
Yeah, definitely.
And we've got some, as usual, some listener interaction, which we'll talk about at the end of the episode, and we're really looking forward to getting your comments. But otherwise, we've got really good kind of heartwarming trip down memory lane for the next, what will be, probably 45 to 50 minutes.
Yeah.
Can't wait.
Can't wait.
So do you want to kick us off, Dan?
Yes.
Yeah?
I'm going to kick us off with X-Men, the animated series.
Of course, you had to start off with our bread and butter Marvel TV shows.
I mean, this ultimately got me into comics and to about 200 graphic novels later on my shelf.
Yeah.
But yeah, this actually debuted on October 31st, 1992. X-Men was Marvel Comics' second attempt at an animated X-Men TV series.
Oh, was it?
Yeah. There was a pilot called X-Men Pride of the X-Men in 1989, which wasn't picked up.
Right.
So it must have been rubbish, basically.
But it was only was it a whole series or pilot, you say?
It was just a pilot.
Yeah, just a one-off episode.
But this actually spanned across 5 seasons with 76 episodes, and the final episode aired in March 1997.
Oh, was it that late?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Exec producers included Stan Lee.
Of course.
And Avi Arad.
Yep.
Arad. He was CEO of Toy Biz in the 90s, and he also founded Marvel Studios.
He did.
But Toy Biz did a lot of the X-Men figurines. Did you ever get those?
Yeah, I always wanted... So, this is going back. Argos.
Yep.
The Argos catalogue.
Yeah.
Now, I had beef, guys. I know we're going slightly off topic, but this is an issue with kids in the 90s, right? You choose something you want from the Argos catalogue, and it won't always be what you want is what you get. Because certain things, for instance, the figurines that you buy in the toy section, there'd be a little asterisk next to your little description of the item. And it'd say, or similar item or something like that. It wouldn't be exactly what's there advertised. So if you've got a range of characters, you've got, I don't know, Professor X, which is boring. you've got Wolverine, which everyone wanted. Or you've got Cyclops, or you've got Beast. You may go, oh yeah, I want that number. You send off your parents to Argos to go get it. They come back. And you want Wolverine with his yellow and black suit and his claws. What did I get?
You got the blue and yellow one, right?
I got a freaking Cyclops.
Oh.
No one wants Cyclops.
No one likes Slick.
It's just boring. So, that was a thing back in those days, you know. You'd just be given what you got. Which is a really shit business model these days, isn't it?
That's harrowing.
Well, you might get this, but actually you may give you something else depending on whether it's on the stock. That's not good enough, is it?
No.
So, I've got beef with Argos in the 90s. Because I got bloody Cyclops when I wanted the gruff cigar-chomping mutant. But anyway, we digress. But it was an issue for me, Dan.
Yeah.
I never got that toy.
I don't blame you.
I never got him.
Just to digress a little bit more, Avi Arad also was producer on Spider-Verse. Into the Spider-Verse, should I say.
Yeah.
Which was phenomenal.
Brilliant.
But back to X-Men.
Yes.
The show features X-Men similar in look and lineup in the early 1990s. X-Men drawn by Jim Lee.
Yep.
Team includes Cyclops, Wolverine, Rogue, Storm, Beast, Gambit, Jubilee, Jean Grey, Professor X, your favourite.
Yeah.
as well as the original character Morph, although he was an adaptation of a previous X-Men member, the Changeling.
Okay.
The casting did adaptations of comic arcs, including Days of Future Past and yep. Phalanx Covenant.
Yep.
I love this, and I remember the first time I picked this up. It was summer holidays in 1995.
Oh, that was simpler times.
Simpler times.
Tim Henman was playing Wimbledon. I think at the height of Wimbledon.
Yeah.
Really hot summer. Long summer holidays. Beautiful.
Yeah.
Oh, what a time to be a child.
What a time to be alive. It was
great.
Yeah, I picked this up and I went to school after the summer holidays finished, and my friend said, "Oh, you've been watching X-Men. There's comics." I was like, "What? What do you mean comics? There's comics for this?" And yeah, it's all, it blew up out of control. So much so that I now have nearly 200 graphic novels on my shelf. Not of X-Men though, unfortunately, but
but you have a couple of X-Men though, right?
Yeah. Mm. It essentially sort of expanded me into this whole Marvel universe.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe this podcast wouldn't exist if it wasn't for our love of the MCU.
Yeah. And I'll probably have to agree, you know, I got on board probably at a similar time. And it's got one of the most iconic intros of TV shows.
Yeah, for sure.
Should you ever listen?
Yeah, let's do it. Good.
Such an iconic intro. It's just brilliant.
Yeah, love it.
You know when that comes on, you know you're on to a really good, what, 25 minutes I guess it was aired for.
Yeah,
they were quite short episodes, but
yeah,
fantastic stuff.
Oh, I did try to download these at one point, couldn't get hold of them anywhere, so I failed. Yeah,
okay, but I'm sure you can get them on DVD now, right?
Oh, yeah, box more than likely, yeah. Might do that.
Do it.
Might have a look on Amazon when I go home.
Put it on your Christmas list.
Yeah.
Because you can probably pick them up quite cheap.
Yeah, for sure. Love it. So what have you got?
Ah, well, quite uncharacteristic of me, Dan.
Yeah.
I have started off with an absolute blinding classic. Should you have a listen to the intro?
Yeah, let's do it.
So yeah, that is, of course,
The Rugrats,
yeah.
This was actually one of my choices.
Oh, was it really?
Yeah.
Perfect. Well, should I give a bit of synopsis, Dan?
Do it.
The show focuses on a group of toddlers. Actual babies.
Yep.
In their nappies or their diapers for our American audience. And the experiences of a courageous, adventurous, one-year-old baby named Tommy Pickles. Good old Tommy.
What a name.
Bald-headed. Always his nappy.
Blue t-shirt.
Yeah. And his group of playmates, several other infants. Got Chucky, his red-haired, kind of scaredy cat, best mate.
Phil and Lil, the twins.
Who always used to eat worms, I think, and play in mud.
Yeah.
Gross. You got Angelica, who I think is his cousin.
Yeah.
who, because in certain episodes they would not just be roaming around in the real world, they would go into the kind of their make-believe world and should be like the villain, wouldn't she?
Yeah.
Or the villainess. And she'd always be the arch nemesis of the toddlers.
She was always screaming, "You stupid babies."
Yeah. Just not very nice.
No.
There were other characters, of course, not just the kids. It was the parents who often were portrayed as easily distracted. On these terms, the NSPCC and social services would go around and they would lock them up because, of course, the kids would then go off roaming. They'd walk outside. They would pull themselves up onto kitchen counters. They would play around with appliances. And, of course, these days, that's a general no-no in parentalhood.
Wouldn't know.
Well, never say never, Dan. But these days, I'll get in trouble if that happens. And, yeah, you get the father, Stupicles,
yeah,
who's the inventor. I think he's just described here at least as an often feckless toy inventor, who designs have been known to either fail or break. So he comes up with these very strange devices or children's toys that never actually make the shelves, and they're quite scary and garish.
It's like every episode, wasn't it, if I recall?
He's always churning out some kind of shitty toy that ends up exploding or turns on the children.
Yeah.
It's quite dark. And I guess the new age mother with the scary bright orange hair, Diddy Pickles, who I'm sure is doing her best as a mother, but she's also quite idiotic and soft. Now, the series originally aired back in 1991. It was initially halted in 93 after 65 episodes spanning three seasons, with the last one airing in 1994. There were a couple of films. So they did the Rugrats movie in 98, did Rugrats in Paris, which I think I've seen in 2000.
I saw that.
And then there's a crossover. Did you ever watch the Wild Thornberrys?
Yes.
Bit weird, but made by the same people, Class B, Cuspo.
Yeah.
Cuspo. I think it's a Hungarian name, so I'm probably not pronounce it correctly. But I think it's Cuspo, the sea sun. And there's a crossover called The Rugrats Go Wild, where those two worlds collided. So yeah, the final run after that break was 172 episodes over nine seasons in the end.
Blimey.
Now the Rugrats end up being the eighth longest running American animated TV series of all time, and won over 20 awards during its 13-year period.
Oh wow!
Including four Daytime Emmy Awards. Didn't know that was a thing. Six Kids' Choice Awards and its own star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame.
Wow.
Big stuff.
That's quite good.
Very good stuff. And the series garnered high ratings on Nickelodeon and was the network's top rated show from 95 to 2001. I think it ended up being kind of the flagship cartoon of that network. And of course, because we know Nickelodeon was massive in the US. Is massive was? I don't know whether it's such a big thing now with Disney Plus and everything else. Yeah. And Netflix taking over, but it was a big round in the US, and it was all quite big here.
Yeah,
for cable and the rest.
It actually got high praise from Steven Spielberg.
Did it?
Yeah, he was at the time in 1995 of saying this, producing several competing animated series for Warner Brothers, and referred to the show as one of the several shows that were the best children's programming at the time.
I thought it was quite innovative
for
its time, because I think we remarked as we were seeing the intros, you know, it's a first person perspective of Tommy,
yeah,
as he's crawling around. He looks in the mirror and then switches to the third person,
yeah,
and not even the third person as you're watching, you know, the program proper as a cartoon. The pencils aren't quite so rounded and colourful.
It's scratchy, isn't it?
I think that's probably the best way of describing it. It's rough and ready,
yeah.
And it's raw as a drawn television programme, as an animation, but that's what drew me to it. It wasn't kind of splashed in colour. It was quite gritty.
Yeah.
Scratchy. And yeah, I loved it. And of course, the intro is just, it's brilliant.
Yeah.
Sums it up perfectly.
He had described it as a sort of a TV Peanuts for our time. And interestingly, Rugrats made 92nd of best animated series by IGN.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so it was up there.
Yeah, yeah. And I can't disagree with that. And, you know, I can't remember what TV programme it was on back in the day. Was it ITV? No, was it BBC?
What's that, Rugrats?
Yeah.
I used to watch on Nickelodeon.
I think it used to be on BBC because, you know, the morning TV shows.
Oh, yeah.
Live and Kicking. I think yeah. It was on Live and Kicking.
Yeah, BBC, wasn't it?
Yeah, because I didn't have cable or Sky's. I had it until late 90s.
Live and Kicking had young Zoe Ball, if I recall.
Uh-huh, yeah. A lot of the cornerstone of British entertainment started on children's TV. And Blue Peter.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we're going back. But yeah, that's that was my first one, Rugrats, because it's just, it's heartwarming to see. And it just, you just, oh yeah, I remember that. I remember the granddad that always falls asleep.
Yeah.
He's supposed to be looking after the kids.
But they're getting out of their pen and buggering off out in the garden.
Well, totally, he does that every time he falls asleep. I mean, look, he's an old OAP. Fair play, he's done his time. Best intentions. But the kids literally just jump the fence.
And run riot.
And they go out in the garden eating bloody mud and having fights with one another. But hey, that's what kids do.
Yeah, for sure.
And it was simpler time back in the 90s, so why not?
Mm.
So yeah, Rugrats, my all-time, probably near enough my all-time number one.
That's high praise.
And it's a strong, solid number one for me as I come out the starting blocks this nostalgia trip.
Mm.
But what's your number two, Dan?
Live and Kicking again.
Yeah.
So Saturday mornings, I used to watch my favourite Webhead.
Live and Kicking, wasn't it?
It was.
Yeah, yeah.
Spider-Man, the animated series.
Great. Do you know what time it used to be on?
I can't remember
It was either 10 o'clock or 10:30. It's quite late.
I remember before they had a competition one morning for loads of Spider-Man figures. Like stuff that you can get in shops.
Yeah.
I remember entering it and being really disappointed finding out that I hadn't won it the following week.
Yeah.
Gutted.
Absolutely. Soul destroying.
It really was.
Such a great time in the 90s, wasn't it?
But I digress. Shall we listen to the theme tune?
Yeah, let's do it.
Blinder. Absolutely love that. Again, like the X-Men, memorable theme song.
And we were remarking, actually, off recording, actually, that I noticed this before, but they didn't add in scenes from like the first couple of episodes and then later then developed and wrote and recorded, I guess, key scenes. They did the whole season and then spliced it into the intro.
Yeah.
So you really were eager to look forward to those scenes, those explosive elements, as you were going through that 20 episode arc. And it's fantastic to see that and see all the characters they crammed into those seasons. It's brilliant.
Oh, so good. So the first episode actually aired on the 19th of November 1994. And the final episode date was the 31st of January 1998. Bitten by a radioactive spider, Peter Parker develops spider-like superpowers.
Does he?
Yeah. I don't think we ever got the origin in this.
I don't think we...
It was always sort of shown off, wasn't it, in the scenes at the start.
That's enough really, isn't it?
Yeah, it's all you need.
Yeah.
He uses these powers to fight crime in New York City while trying to balance it with the struggles of his personal life. So again, like the comics, which we always talk about.
And he is a reporter for
the Daily Bugle.
Daily Bugle.
J. Jonah Jameson.
He does.
So this actually spanned 5 seasons, 65 episodes.
Wow.
As the story begins, Peter has already gained his superpowers and is a part-time freelance photographer for Daily Bugle, as
yep.
you mentioned.
Yep.
The show features some of Spider-Man's classic villains, including the Kingpin, the Green Goblin, the Lizard, the Shocker, Doc Ock, Mysterio, the Scorpion, Rhino, the Vulture, and Venom. The show also features appearances from various other Marvel superheroes. So do you uh-huh. remember who appeared in this?
I want to say Wolverine turns up at some point.
There was a crossover with the X-Men.
Yeah.
Fantastic Four.
There was, yeah.
Iron Man. Although it was a bit later on in the later seasons.
Uh-huh. Because there was an Iron Man animated TV program as well, which came before this.
Yeah.
And this was truly when Iron Man came out of a suitcase.
Yeah.
That was an interesting TV program as well. That was touching on the mystical elements.
Yeah.
Like the of the Ten Rings and the magic and stuff, which is a bit off the wall, but I don't think it was that version that it crossed over. I think it was more of a more different kind of iteration.
Yeah. I mean, there was a Fantastic Four animated series, but I don't think it really sort of picked up like the X-Men and Spider-Man did.
No.
Also, there was Daredevil, Blade, Doctor Strange, yes. The Punisher, and Captain America. Comic book adaptions included the Insidious Six, or as we know them now, the Sinister Six.
Yep.
The alien costume, where he gets the black suit.
Yep.
And then we see the origins of Venom and Secret Wars.
Or, yeah.
As such, like, I think it was like the last couple of episodes of the final season.
Mm-hmm. And we've had a number of iterations of the black suit or Venom, you know, in recent movie times. I think it's still way better handled in this animated TV series. So if anyone disagrees with me, please let me know. But I think that's the best handled storyline and the best way of it being transferred from the comics to animation or to live TV show.
It was very similar to the comics, I think.
Yeah, 100%.
Very, very much so.
Really enjoyed it, and it was classy. It was a well thought out, well produced, well voice acted, well penciled TV show.
I love how there was always sort of very simple CGI as well. We were talking about this when we were watching the video for the theme song.
Very sparing as well. You don't always yeah. see it. It's always usually when he's web slinging around New York, isn't it? That's about it. There's not really too much to be dabbling in.
Ever have the figurines? Again, I know you had Beef of Argos.
I didn't. I did have one, I think, in the mid-90s. I did have a Spider-Man, yeah. And he had, you know the things you can get on in the car for your... To protect kids.
Oh, the suckers.
Yeah. He had suckers on his hands. So you could, you know, lick the suckers, which is weird. And then you'd stick him to a window and he'd stay there.
Oh, that's cool.
Not terribly practical, because then you'd have to, like, peel him off, as he climbs. But, yeah, I had one of those, which was pretty cool.
I had a handful. I had Doc Ock. He had, like, the tentacles. And he had, like, this thing on the back, and you'd pull it and the tentacles would sort of, like, move.
Okay.
I had the black suit, where at the front of his chest it would pull out and it'd be like a long web.
Oh, cool.
It would sort of reel back in, but it snapped.
So okay.
Bit crap.
What, as in broke?
Yeah, it just broke. Right. Rubbish. I had to blue tack it back on, so he looked alright. Yeah, shame. Who else? I had Kingpin, who sort of had like a slamming action.
Yep. He was a great version of the character, actually. I mean, very overpowered, but I thought he was quite a well balanced character.
Yeah.
More akin to similar to the Netflix situation of Daredevil's Kingpin.
I did manage to get my hands on this, actually, and I binged the whole 5 seasons about 5 years ago.
Uh huh.
So much nostalgia. I loved it.
Oh, it's brilliant. So good.
I think it's going to be on the Disney streaming service.
Yeah, I think we talked about that before.
Yeah, or was it X-Men?
No, it was Spider-Man, I think.
Yeah.
Both of them.
Good. Can't wait for Disney Plus then, because I'll be binging on these.
Got to wait again. Till March, mate. At least here in the UK.
Yeah, it's not long, is it?
No.
I've got other things keeping busy.
You do?
Lost in Space. Sex Ed.
All of it, mate.
Mm.
All of it. Cool. So is that you for the webhead?
That is me. That is my second choice, or my third after talking about Rugrats.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm going to go again off the wall here, Dan. The Magic School Bus.
Oh, my life.
This one was really weird, and I remember getting up at the crack of dawn early on at least in the UK, I think it was on Channel 4 back in the day when you only had 5 channels and 5 was new. And it's like 6 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
Which is a god-awful time of day to get up. And you put it on, bleary-eyed, and, well, this theme tune would be on.
Seatbelts, everyone! Please let this be a normal field trip with a friend. No way!
Cruising on down Main Street, you're relaxed and feeling good. Next thing that you know, you'll see it. Puss in my neighborhood. Surfing on the sine wave, swinging through the stars. Yeah. Take a left at your intestine. Take your second right past Mars. On the magic school bus. Alligator nostril.
Climb on the magic school bus.
Make a plankton too.
Take that.
On the magic school bus. Drop the river of lava.
On the magic school bus.
Such a fine thing to do. So strap your bums right to the seat. Come on in and don't be shy. Just to make your day complete. You might get baked into a pie
on the magic school bus.
Step inside, it's a wild ride. Come on,
ride on the magic school bus.
And yeah, it was quite an educational program. An educational children's program, which was weird. Do you remember much about it? What each episode kind of was?
Wasn't there an episode where they shrunk down and went into the human body?
Yeah. And I've written down here, it's reminiscent of Inner Space.
Yeah.
You seen that film?
No.
1987? It's usually on a Sunday afternoon on UK. Probably on ITV2 or something like that kind of film. In that film, it's Honey, I Shrunk the Kids kind of genre.
Yeah.
And they shrink this man down in this submarine, effectively, and he's stolen and accidentally injected into someone, and he ends up going through the human body.
Yeah,
it's a live action, I guess, drama stroke comedy, and it's called Inner Space, back in 1987. Anyway, there's synergies with that and the Magic School Bus. So this school bus, as you'd expect, you get on to school bus. You're not taken to school though, Dan.
No.
You're effectively kidnapped and taken to space. Or the school bus is transforms into a submarine, or goes into someone's body, and you're learning about the planets, or you're learning about the ecosystem, or you're learning about the human body, and it's interesting stuff. You know, they will shrink down and go into someone's ear, and even though it doesn't actually connect up that way, they then end up going to the heart, and it talks about, you know, them being sucked into the valves and pushed around the circulatory system. It's it was an interesting program, quite weird, but it's quite educational.
There was that poor kid that thought he was going on a normal school trip.
Yeah, but every bloody time he never ended up going to the classroom.
No.
Always ended up shitting his pants. And I would too. Originally aired back in 1994, it ran for 3 years only.
Really?
Yeah, until it's rerun in 2007. But apparently it quickly then became outdated. To that extent, Jason Fry from the Wall Street Journal expressed an overall appreciation for the series, of course, as I do, but wrote that the episode The Magic School Bus Gets Programmed illustrated that the rapid pace of technological change over 10 years since it first aired meant that it presented an old-fashioned kind of technology gone amok kind of story, and said that it didn't really relate to kids within that time period. You know, they'd then grown up with the internet and things had moved on. CGI had come in and other programs. So when people are looking back at the reruns, they're going, well, this looks a bit shit.
Yeah.
Which I can understand why. Now, the storyline, if you haven't actually seen this, is about Valerie Frizzle, who embarks on an adventure with her class on the school bus. As they journey on their exciting field trips, they discover locations, creatures, time periods. Of course, it goes back in time.
Yeah.
What doesn't this bus do? And more to learn about the wonders of science along the way. Now, apparently in February 2017, quite recently,
yeah,
Netflix announced that a Kate McKinnon was cast in the role of Fiona Felicity Frizzle, the younger sister of Miss Frizzle, now Professor Frizzle, again played by Lily Tomlin. And by this point, the new series had been changed to The Magic School Bus Rides Again. Apparently that series premiered on Netflix in 2017.
Oh, okay.
So it's kind of a reimagining of the storyline, and the characters have moved on, and obviously it's handed down. I haven't seen that one. I don't have care to see it. Why do I need to see it when I've got the amazing original to cast my eyes over? And it was a strange one to wake up to. But you knew that every time they got on that bus, they weren't going to go to a boring science lesson or sitting on the stalls in a classroom. They were going to outer space, or they were going to learn about the pyramids, or they were going to do something. And it was just a really cool TV programme.
Yeah.
You know, she'd yank on that lever, and you wouldn't know what was going to happen. It's either going to become a submarine and sprout, you know, wings and a propeller, or it would end up having two rocket boosts. I mean, bloody, who knows who bloody made this school bus? And it's quite inadvisable, isn't it, to have all that technology in a rather pedestrian kind of vehicle. But either way, they did it, and we're all the better for it.
We learned something new every week.
We did. And for that reason, I love it. So yeah, Magic School Bus, bit weird, but as a wee nipper, I thoroughly enjoyed it.
It was goodie, for sure. Next up from me, a certain football head. Hey Arnold.
Well, the American football head, I guess. Yeah. Not the European version of football.
No, it was the rugby ball head.
Yeah.
Yeah. Shall we listen to the theme song?
Let's do it. Well, here we go. Well, here we go.
Move it, football head.
Quite.
So The Adventures of Arnold, a grade schooler who lives with his grandparents, Phil and Gertrude. Quality names there.
Brilliant.
First episode aired on the 7th of October 1996. And it ran over 100 episodes for 5 seasons. And it finally came to an end on the 8th of June 2004.
Thank God for that.
You weren't a fan, were you?
I didn't like it. I didn't understand it, but I think it's because it was a Nickelodeon program.
Yeah, it was, yeah.
And I didn't have cable, I had Sky, and it was when I was early teenager by then, so it was really too late. I think there were some episodes on ITV. Mm. What was the children's ITV program? I can't recall what it was called. But anyway, it was on the ITV, and I didn't like it. I didn't get it. I think the whole repeating his name at the beginning of the intro kind of put me off. I thought it was annoying.
Arnold.
Yeah.
Arnold.
So, I couldn't get behind it. But I'm not going to, downplay your choice there, Dan. Tell us more.
Hey Arnold stars 9-year-old Arnold. Of course, namesake.
Only 9 years old?
Yeah. And his neighbourhood friends, Gerald, who's a street smart character who generally serves as the leader of the group, and Helga, a girl who bullies Arnold in order to hide the fact that she's in love with him because she made his head out of chewing gum and bubble gum, if I recall, which was kind of weird, a little bit creepy. But just to sort of go into a little bit of the background of Hey Arnold.
Yeah.
Exec producer Craig Bartlett drew inspiration from people he grew up with when creating characters for the show.
That sounds horrific.
I mean, especially Helga. I'd want to kick her in the head. I mean, I don't condone violence.
No. Especially not to a 9-year-old.
No.
You'll get a name for yourself, Dan.
Yeah. That's going to put me in prison. Hey Arnold takes place in the fictional American city of Hillwood. While its geographic location is never revealed outright, Bartlett described the city as an Almagam? Is that a word?
I don't know.
I copy and pasted it, so it's a word.
Okay.
It is now. An amalgam of large northern cities I have loved, including Seattle, my hometown.
Amalgamation,
probably.
Yeah.
It's got to be. I've copied and pasted this.
That'll be the one. Yeah.
So we can't put it down to poor note writing.
No. It's just, yeah.
Yeah.
Just the way it is.
Yeah. Portland, where I went to art school, and Brooklyn.
Did you?
I didn't, no.
Oh.
This is Craig Bartlett.
Oh, okay. About to Craig.
The bridge, the brownstones, the subway. Bartlett, having grown up in Seattle, based many of the show's events on his own experience growing up in the city.
Huh.
So, yeah. Okay. I suppose it's quite real for a cartoon, I guess, but... I mean, would you be worried if someone was making bubblegum heads of you?
Yeah. That would be... you'd like to think that someone would pick up on that kind of behaviour. It wouldn't just be me.
Yeah.
And it'd be reported and then would be seeing some kind of professional.
I mean, the fact a nine-year-old...
That's an awful lot of chewing gum as well.
Yeah.
I mean, I haven't got a massive head, but even so, that's...
I mean, I wouldn't let my nine-year-old kid be chewing that much gum.
No, it's inappropriate. But then again, it was the 90s.
Yeah.
It's a different time.
It really was. Wonderful times.
But that's why we have the pavements full of chewing gum in the UK, Dan, don't we?
Yeah. You still see them now, scarring the pavements of Portsmouth.
Yeah.
That happened.
It did. I mean, what kind of episodes could you expect to see? What would usually happen to the titular character if you were to perhaps switch it on today and gaze back? What would happen to the character?
Cool, blimey, you put me on the spot now. Yeah.
Can you remember?
I've got to think back to a simpler time. It was usually just like things going on in school and stuff, those sort of everyday struggles as a kid, I guess.
Yeah.
Just messing around with your mates, play a bit of basketball. I never played basketball at school.
I did in college. I was pretty good, actually.
Really?
But I'm quite a short guy, so I was pretty useless.
Did you do that thing where you like dribble it between your legs?
I wasn't very good at dribbling, but I was pretty good at shooting.
No, I was terrible.
Yeah.
I was bad at all sports at school, to be fair. Yeah, it was shocking.
You'd be really good at basketball, actually. You're quite a tall lad.
I am now.
You weren't
quite gangly. No, I was bad at school.
Yeah.
Tried to play football. Didn't go very well.
What happened?
Missed an open goal.
Oh.
They never chose me again. You know where you all line up picked. And like you got to choose.
Oh man.
Yeah.
You're left on the bench.
Got left on the bench. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sad times. Or I get stuck in goal where I was shocking. And you get all the sort of hard nuts that used to be able to hit the ball like 100 miles per hour. And the kid that would never bring football boots, but do you remember the school shoes?
Plimsolls?
No.
Oh.
Like the actual school shoes where it had like the ridge around the...
Oh, right, yeah.
Those. And you'd hit it and like you'd just knuckle the ball. It would like fly like twice the speed.
Yes.
Yeah, no, it was quite painful to try and save.
Sounds it. Well, last time I went in goal, I broke and fractured my wrist.
Oh, jeez.
And spent time in a Glaswegian NHS hospital, which was actually a fantastic experience. No, sarcasm intended.
Mm.
They looked after me fantastically. But obviously that wasn't planned. And my career came to a bone-crushing end.
Well, that's a shame. Might have been playing for Pompey now.
I would have surely put them in a better condition than they currently are at the moment.
Well, we got Craig McGravy in goal at the moment.
McGravy?
Well, it's Matt McGivalry. It's a mouthful. I just call him McGravy.
That makes sense.
Scotland's number one.
Is he?
Or something like that, yeah.
I was going to say very much because they've got their own Premier League of, what, 9 teams?
Yeah.
But I'm not here to throw shade at the SPL. I'm just stating the fact.
Back to cartoons.
Yes.
What's your next choice?
Very quickly, Bar the Elephant.
Oh, this is a classic.
This is something else. And You know how people, and we've become those people, at least I have, you know when they say, oh, just don't make them like they used to?
Yeah.
They actually really don't. I mean, have a listen to this intro.
Thank you.
It's just... It's so innocent. And, you know, you see Bar there stoking the fire.
Yeah.
And he's got his monkey friend and he's got the kids who... Is it Bar? Is he the dad who's Bar the king? I think he is.
Oh, yeah, I think
And he got the kids then coming in and he got the helping hand, the maid who's a human. And it's just a very gentle, soft kind of children's TV adaptation. Mm. And it's based upon the books, which was a Jean de Brunhoff, and his original Bar books. Now, if you have no idea what the hell I'm saying, I'll give you kind of a synopsis. The plot of the first two seasons focus on the story of Bar as it's told by him to his children. So I think nearly every beginning of the episode, the children, they don't want to go to sleep, or they're just getting themselves ready in their gym jams.
Yeah.
They calm down, they want to be by the fire, the nanny's hovering at the door in a weird kind of creepy way, and Bar decides to tell the kids these stories about his upbringing, you know, as a bedtime story before they get marched off to bed. And the past Bar is a young elephant who is traumatised by a hunter slaughtering his mother, flees from his home forest to the city, where a kind old lady adopts him and teaches him the ways of human life. He returns to his home forest full of ideas for progress and, following the previous Elephant King's death from eating poisonous mushrooms.
Oh.
He's trying to get high, you see, and he took the wrong ones and he...
That was it.
It happens. So if you're going to eat mushrooms, guys, you want a trip, make sure you know what you're doing, or take someone who knows what you're doing with you.
I still wouldn't trust it, to be honest.
I wouldn't. He hatches a plan to drive out the unnamed hunter and his men. For his heroism, Bar's crowned King of the Elephants, plans and builds Celesteville, and becomes a father himself. Of course, it doesn't explain how he becomes a father. That'd be weird and creepy. It's a children's programme. But we know how that happens. Now, whilst the first two seasons focus on Bar's recollection of his childhood in the early years as the king, the series then shifts focus in the third season to Bar's family in the present day. Now, we've already mentioned some of the characters here. So Celeste is his wife and queen of Celesteville. We've got Arthur, who I think ends up in the later seasons, becomes more of a prominent character. He's a mischief-making brother-in-law. You've got Pom, who's the oldest of the triplets and the lead of the children. Flora is the fun-loving and strong-willed child. And Alexander's the smallest of the triplets. Is a non-stop ball of entertainment, apparently, who is disarmingly naive about the commotion he causes. And you've got Isabel, who's the youngest of the four children, who begins to walk and talk at an early age. Now, critics cited Bar as a good role model who promotes sharing and getting along with others.
Oh, for sure.
The designs of the characters and the simple animation capture the essence of Jean de Brunhoff's understated watercolour illustrations, says the Los Angeles Times of the day. Now, what's some awards, Dan? In 1991, TV series won a 7 Dior Award for Best Youth. In 1989, the series won a Gemini Award for Best Animated Programme or Series. In 1990, it won a Gemini for Best Animated Programme or Series. And in 1992, it won another award for Best Animated Programme or Series again for Gemini. So it was well received, and there were a couple of computer games in 2010. But when I see the intro and I recall the episodes, they were just very, very simple. They were family-friendly, they were heartwarming, there wasn't an awful lot of drama to it, they're very simple storylines, but again, they were quite family-friendly, and I think they used to be on very, very early again in the morning, I think on BBC Two, I want to say.
I remember when I used to watch it, it would be on after you finished school.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so I'm going back to a real simple time when I was like 5 or 6 years old.
Yeah, perhaps it was daytime and it was repeated. What they tend to do is they had it in the daytime and then repeated for the weekends or vice versa. So you probably saw it in the daytime.
I'd see it like at 3:30 when I'd get home from school and it'd be the first thing because I loved the BBC.
Yeah.
And their
brilliant. CBBC was fantastic.
Yeah.
No, I used to see it first thing on, I think, a Saturday or Sunday on BBC One. Just ask the chalkboard woman.
Yes.
With the puppet.
Eagerly anticipating your cartoons.
I just wanted her to bug her off.
Yeah. Get in the sea.
Because she used to be on there until, is it 5:30?
Yeah.
Or 5 o'clock? She was bloody annoying.
Don't get that now.
No, you don't. And not this day, 24 hours television programme, culture in. And yeah, she's very early in the morning. And it was a nice way to wake up. Start your day down as a wee nipper.
Yeah.
I loved it. So yeah, Barbar is my third choice, and it's just
great choice.
So simple, but so good.
Lovely. Next up is another Nickelodeon cartoon, although it did go to Disney.
Oh yeah,
Doug.
Doug, yes.
Absolute classic. Shall we listen to the song?
Let's have a go.
I loved Nickelodeon as a kid, and like, this is one of my all-time favourites.
I think that's probably why I couldn't get on board with this or Hey Arnold.
Because you weren't really a Nick kid.
Or was that a Nick kid?
So the first episode aired on the 11th of August 1991, and it finally came to an end on the 26th of June 1999.
Oh, wow.
It spanned across 117 episodes, which was made up of 167 segments across 7 seasons.
Wasn't mucking around?
No. So it went on for good, like, 8 years. Nearly 8 years. So it's about Douglas Yancey Funny. What a name, eh?
Yeah, Doug Funny.
Who just moved to Bluffington with his parents, Phil and Theda, and his sister Judy. When he isn't playing with friends Skeeter, Patty and BB, Roger Klotz is one of Doug's rivals. Doug likes to write in his journal and fantasizes that he is a superhero named Quail Man.
I remember this.
Yeah. So the series actually premiered alongside Rugrats and the Ren and Stimpy Show, which we'll talk about a little bit later on.
Yeah.
On August the 11th, 1991. The show was not as immediately popular as its counterparts, interestingly enough. Not sure why, but hey, I've done a bad job on my notes. That, or I'm not fitting enough onto my screen. I can't even blame my writing this time around.
Sure I can. But it was, when did you watch this? What, if you were a Nick kid, was it on? Well, I guess all the time, really.
It was all the time, yeah.
Because it was their flagship programme, I guess.
Yeah, there was all sorts on Nickelodeon. Like, you'd sort of be like one after the other. You'd have like Rugrats, and you'd have...
They had lots of back-to-backs, didn't they?
Yeah.
So yeah, like...
Lots of Rugrats, bit of Doug.
Bit of Doug.
Bit of Ren and Stimpy, which was weird as hell.
Yeah, I didn't like that. But we got a comment from other listeners.
Yeah, so we'll get into that a bit later on.
I remarked to you, Dan, didn't I, off recording? Because we do talk off recording, guys. I know it's strange. We don't just communicate on it. And I was saying that there are some very close, albeit tenuous, synergies between the 7-Up man and his character.
Yeah, oh yeah, for sure. As soon as you pointed it out, I was like, yeah, I get it. I see it now.
But I just didn't get Doug. Because could he draw his own reality? Was that... Something he could do, or
yeah, something like that.
Did he dream a lot?
It was like his fantasizing thing, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And he had his own, like, his journal. So I'm going back a long time trying to remember what each episode was about. But I remember Quail Man because he wore pants over his shorts.
Yeah, yeah. He had a mask, didn't he?
He had a belt around his head.
Yeah.
Well, it's just a bit weird. But
the kids were.
I loved it back then. But now I sort of look back and go, why were you watching that?
Yeah.
But I liked it.
Simpler time.
Ain't no X-Men or Spider-Man, I'm afraid.
No, but it's the next best thing back in the 90s. I'm going to go to a British-French animated series next, commissioned by the European Broadcasting Union.
Yeah.
It's a sore subject here in the UK, talk about European Union. We won't get into that. But it's between 1992 and 1995. It is based on a series of books written by the English author Colin Dam.
I know where you're going with this.
Should we listen to the intro?
Yes, do it.
Of course, that is The Animals of Farthing Wood. I'm not crying, you're crying. Yeah, this was principally made by the UK and the French, and also aired in Norway, Germany, Netherlands, Belgium, Ireland and Italy back in 1993.
This was absolutely harrowing. Because I remember it for the wrong reasons and not the right reasons.
But those were the only reasons, because the premise was quite dull, I guess. Even as a child, I was thinking, oh, is this it?
I mean, the animals are sort of trying to move out of the woods that's being knocked down, right? Am I?
Yeah, I mean, there's an ecological kind of life lesson to be had here. It is all around the fact that man is destroying a wood. It's not the jungles or the Amazon, but it's the same principle, right?
And they were suffering in a drought as well.
Yeah. So the first season followed the animals of Farthing Wood, who are forced to flee their homes after humans start destroying it to build suburban tract houses. Led by Fox, who's, I guess, the main character and hero, and guided by Toad, the animals left Farthing Wood on a journey to White Deer Park. It's all coming back now. A nature reserve where they would be protected. So there was lots of doubt. You know, the animals are going, well, I don't want to leave my home. And they'll be fine. The humans will leave us alone, of course, as they start to go around the edge of the wood and start cutting down, you know, certain characters' homes. They start saying, actually, mate, this is getting shit. Yeah. I think we need to leave. And a lot of them are going, right, let's pack up and go. And they all leave as a community of animals. But a lot of them, like, this place doesn't exist, does it?
No.
This White Deer Reserve Park, this doesn't exist. We're all going to die out here. And it's like a fabled kind of nirvana that you don't actually believe exists until almost like the end of the season, when they finally reach the destination. And they're like, oh, we're here now. And it was like, oh, great. But Toad got squashed on the N25 as he was doing the perilous crossing. And I think like about a good two or three episodes was them crossing a busy main road.
Yeah.
Because as an animal, you know, you've got to traverse the countryside, and you're coming across the perils of man. And something as simple as that for us actually is a big thing for the animals. And I think quite a few animals bit the dust as they went through this journey, didn't they?
I remember there was an absolutely harrowing episode. So I think the mice and the voles had babelings. Babies?
Babelings.
Babelings.
Yep.
That's a new word for the week roundup.
That'll do.
And this bird picks up the babies and puts them on the thorns.
Yeah, impales them.
And like, this is probably the first time you sort of see real like blood and grit in the show. That's one of the first moments.
The second one was
where Fox tries to save Badger in the river.
Yeah.
Badger escapes, but Fox gets absolutely wiped out by this big thing that comes towards them.
Yeah.
And then fox hunting.
That's a thing.
That is a thing. And I'm afraid one of our local MPs voted for it. I'm not going to mention any names, but she can get in the sea.
She can. Along with the rest of the Brexit-loving party. But again, we're not going to go into politics, Dan. We won't go down that slippery slope. Now, the number of apparently differences between the books, which they're based upon, and a television series. For instance, because of the dual kind of ownership of the story between the UK and the French. Obviously, in the books, some of it was illustrated, whereas most of it's words. There was a challenge in, well, I mentioned about the motorways. The carriageways apparently had traffic driving on a different side of the road depending on what series you're in.
Oh, okay.
So, of course, in the UK, you drive on the left, and that's where you see some of it. And then because some of it was written and drawn and animated, shall I say, in France, it'd be on the right-hand side. The books obviously had something very similar. So a lot of the characters changed from male to female.
Oh, okay.
So this included Adder, Weasel, Owl and Kestrel, who retained the markings of a male Kestrel. Owl had also been known as Tawny Owl in the books. I think I remember that because I had a couple of books. Minor plot changes also existed, such as the order of the pheasants' deaths, the deaths of Badger and Moley, and the motives of certain characters. Apparently Scarface has a different reason for attacking the farthing animals, and Bold leaves the park after an argument with his father, which I remember in the cartoon, rather than to find a mate as he does in the books. In contrast to Badger's death, Toad and Mossy survived the television series, the former befriending Spike the Rat, who killed Mossy and was killed himself by Adder in the books. Now, the only main plot line that's left out of the series is a plot of the Siege of the White Deer Park, in which the cat known as the Beast, a big wild cat, attacks the park, causing further trouble for the animal's survival. Now, apparently the storyline of the book is presumably removed because of too much horror and peril themes and the subplots that occur in the book. So even with kind of the traumatic experience that we have of the animated TV show, that was still dumbed down compared to the books, which apparently was quite horrific for a younger audience.
When you mentioned the pheasants as well, that just racked my brain.
Just feathers everywhere, that's integral.
Yeah. Wasn't there one where...
Was it a farmer killed him or something?
Yeah, and the other pheasant sees his wife, if you were, sort of cooked, roasted.
Or was it plucking and then... That's plucking the feathers. Ooh. And cooking, yeah.
Yeah, and then he freaks out and meets his own grisly death.
It's
harrowing.
It is.
And I remember it for all the wrong reasons as a kid.
Yeah. Didn't it come out the same time as Watership Down?
I remember watching Animals Farmwood around 1992, I want to say.
I remember 93, 94. I think it's a similar time as that film around hares.
Yeah, I think you're right, 93, yeah.
And it's just that's a horrible film as well. Very graphic for child audience.
What were they trying to do to us as kids?
I don't know, but clearly introduced us very heavily to the concept of death, which... I'm not sure it's a good or bad thing looking back on it. But those are the realities of the animal kingdom, of the natural world. Everything can't be rosy. And sure enough, they do see their untimely end at the hands of nature and of man. So I guess why not?
Well, when we drove up to Chichester the other week with Vicky to do the Harry Potter episode, we did see a couple of dead foxes on the... A27.
Yeah, and it's not uncommon to see a couple of squished deer as well.
Oof.
Yeah, it's that's not a good road. Apparently, they were trying to get to their White Deer Park and they didn't survive.
Damn.
So
sad times.
Yeah, the animals are farthing wood in IRL. But that's the one that I've chosen just because I had the books and it's just so haunting, that TV program, for all the wrong reasons, but because it is just so gritty. That's why I've chosen it.
Good choice. So my final pick is Disney's Recess.
Oh yeah.
Shall we check the song out?
Let's do it. Yeah, iconic.
Oh, we were saying as we were listening to that that even though it's been what, nearly
25 years, I think, for me.
Really?
Yeah, that yeah,
long? Yeah.
Gosh, I'm old. But yeah, it's a long time for me.
Yeah, I mean, I was saying, I picked up on this, I think, probably sort of early millennia. I would say 2001, 2002. My brother was watching it, and I got into it and watched it with him after he'd, like, finished school. I'd come home from college, and it'd be the first time we would...
That was, like, 18 years ago.
Yeah. It's mad, isn't it?
You're old.
I'm old. I'm technically, like, 34 next week.
Get in the ground.
That sucks, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Get in the ground. Are you wishing death upon me? Or...
Well, you're old.
Not that old.
Some of the listeners might disagree. Yeah, but, yeah, I mean, I haven't seen it in absolutely ages, and yet I know the theme tune.
I mean, it did first air on the 31st of August 1997. Final episode aired on the 16th of January 2006, and it spanned across six seasons with 127 episodes.
Yeah.
So a bit of a premise for our listeners. Six brave fourth graders of Third Street School make it their mission to protect the other kids of the playground. Despite the rule of King Bob and his minions, who enforce his unwritten laws, TJ, Ashley, Vince, Gus, Gretchen, and Mikey seek a rational balance between conformity and individuality. Got high praise from the critics as well, Alex.
Did it?
Yes. TV critics Alan Sepinwall and Matt Zoller Seitz. I think I got that right. It's a bit of a German name. I'm really bad at names on the weekly roundup, as we already know. They wrote favourably about Recess in their 2016 book TV. So it's called TV, the book.
Oh, right, yeah.
Stating that the series is easily one of the smartest, most prankishly playful adult cartoons ever passed off as children's entertainment.
Mm.
This is probably why I enjoyed it as a in my late teens, I guess.
Yeah.
Recess is a highly ritualised bit of entertainment that strikes the same notes over and over again, but always in infinite variation and with a surprising eye for psychological grace notes, especially when characters you thought of as a brusque and one-dimensional reveal their fears and dreams to one another.
Mm.
I loved it.
It was great, and I think just having the playground as like a... its own kind of ecosystem.
Yeah.
It'd have the different kind of clans and groups who they'd have to barter with and work, you know, to get to their objective or to their mission of that episode was just... It was tongue-in-cheek, but you could see it playing out in playgrounds across the world. You know, you'd have your different groups, the jocks in the corner and the weird kids who had their own little tribe covered in mud and paint and stuff, because they were the preschool kids. I seem to remember they were the younger kids.
Yeah, because they were like they were sort of always climbing the ropes up.
Yeah,
the
yeah, like Neanderthals. And yeah, you had like the whole kind of underground kind of ecosystem that was within the realms of the playground was just it was an interesting kind of take on the school setting, and I really enjoyed it.
Was it ever like that for you at school, looking back on that?
I was probably the Neanderthal with paint and mud on their face climbing the walls. No, I mean, yeah, every school has their groups. I don't think it was quite so much a contrast as the programme of Recess, but yeah, and that's why it's so relatable, because you did have, you could understand where they were coming from.
Yeah.
And the characters were just so lovable as well.
I had a bit of a group of friends like that when I was at secondary school. We called ourselves the in crowd. We were just a mix of different people. We had like a chav, we had like a hard nut, a couple of nerds.
And what were you?
The quiet one, I guess.
Mm.
But yeah, it's relatable.
Yeah.
That's probably why I loved it so much.
And it's you can tell it's a Disney effort. It's Disney, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
You can tell it's a Disney effort. The animation, I think, was of its time. It was a very polished piece of animation.
Mm.
You know, it was great storyline, great pencils, fantastic intro, which is iconic. Yeah, it was great stuff. I really enjoyed it.
But that rounds up my choices.
Good stuff, Dan. Well, I'm going to finish off another Disney one now.
Yep, let's do it.
The name of the show is a play on words. It could either be the rapid descent of an aircraft in a steep spiral, or it could be in the show's name. It could be a way of describing a story. Of course, I'm talking about Tailspin.
I remember this. It had the big bear.
Yep.
I used to watch it, I think, on a Sunday morning.
Uh-huh.
Way back in a simpler time of...
It was very early 90s.
Early 90s, yeah.
Yeah. If this is starting to hit a note with you, listener, it's an American animated television series based on the fictional city of Cape Suzette, which first aired in 1990 as a preview on Disney Channel and later that year part of the Disney Afternoon. The thing that confused me when I first watched it is, I recognise these characters, but this is a modern setting.
Mm.
Why did I recognise it? It wasn't until I was apparently quite a slow child. It's related to, the 1967 animated feature, the classic The Jungle Book.
Yeah.
And the reason being is because it takes the main character as Blue the Bear, you know, who guides Mowgli through his journey through the jungle as a child, then reuniting him with the humans. Almost that father figure, that mentor.
Yeah.
But he's then taking on kind of human characteristics. And he's flying a plane. I'm like, well, what's this all about? What am I missing?
He's gone from being in the jungle life to being a pilot.
Yeah.
How did that happen?
I know, right? The term I'm looking for is anthropomorphic animals, which basically means that through normal wild animals exist too, but no humans. So there's wild animals, but actually the animals take on the role of humans. So they stand up, they're talking, they're flying planes, they're doing their normal business life, they're working. Humans don't exist. Now, the time frame of the series is never really specifically addressed, but it appears to be the mid to late 1930s. Now, the series centres, as I said, of the bush pilot Baloo the Bear, not the jungle faring type, whose air cargo freight business, Baloo's Air Service, is sooner or later known as Hire for Hire. Play on words there. An orphan boy, a little bear, I think, and a former air pirate, the ambitious Grizzly Kit Cloud Kicker. What a great name. Not Shit Kicker, but Cloud Kicker. attaches to Baloo and becomes his navigator. And he sometimes calls him Papa Bear.
Papa Bear.
Which is a bit weird. Together they are the crew of the Hire for Hire only aircraft, a 20-year-old modified seaplane named the Sea Duck. This big hulking yellow thing. Now from there the series follows the ups and downs of the company and its staff, who sometimes in the vein of action old adventure film serials of the 30s and 40s, which are synergies with like the Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Yeah.
Now their adventures often involve encounters with a gang of air pirates led by Don Carnage, and they're often, you know, having air battles, and I think there's a fortress in the sky or something. So it's there's always a bit of peril, but they manage to always win out at the end of the day, and they end up, you know, becoming these heroes for hire of the skies. Now, it did win an Emmy Award back in 1991, so just soon after it started, for Outstanding Animated Program under the category of for programming more than 1 hour.
Mm.
There's also a game, Dan.
It was a game.
Apparently three different games, in fact.
Okay.
One was a side-scrolling shooting game published by Capcom. It's under, you know, safe hands there. For the NES and the Game Boy. And then two other platform games, one for Sega, for the Genesis and Game Gear, and the other developed for the NEC for the TurboGrafx-16.
Oh, okay.
Which I've never heard of.
No.
But I do know of an NEC. So, yeah, that one confused me as a wee nipper. I would have been, what, six at the time, because, of course, I grew up on, you know, the Jungle Book. You know, my dad being of the 50s, he grew up in the 50s, and he would have loved the original Disneys, so I grew up on the old kind of, you know, Jungle Book and Robin Hood,
yeah,
Disneys. And so I thought, well, what's this cat's doing? Is this the same cat? And of course it is, but albeit in name. And I really enjoyed it, you know, the whole antics and flying through the air and this clapped out old kind of plane which had its own kind of, well, it was a character in its own right, right?
Yeah.
Like an old Betty of the air, it was great. And I really enjoyed it. It was really fast paced action, but it's quintessentially Disney. It was quality art, quality voice acting, and storylines are brilliant. And yeah, for that reason, I thought I'd end on the high, Dan, but
yeah.
I really enjoyed that series and they just didn't make enough of it because it was great.
I think we've probably got more choices in the background, so this could be another...
Oh, this is a volume one for sure.
Yeah,
yeah,
easily. A bit like 90s films. I've got so many more I could choose from.
Yeah.
For sure.
100%.
I'm looking forward to 2020.
I'd say it's going to be a busy year.
Yeah. I mean, this year's been busy.
Yeah, and we're going to be doing our Christmas Day message phase soon.
Yeah.
We'll do a recap and look forward to next year. But before that, Dan...
We've got the listener.
We do.
First up, we've got Dave, or in my realms, my dad. He chose Ren and Stimpy, as we mentioned earlier. Just to sort of give a bit of a background, Ren is a psychotic chihuahua, and Stimpson J. Cat is a dim-witted Manx cat who goes by the nickname Stimpy. Have a host of unusual adventures. So the show premiered on August the 11th, 1991, as one of the original three Nicktoons, alongside Rugrats and Doug. The show ended on December the 16th, 1995.
All right, it's quite late than, I remember.
So it didn't last all that long, but it was controversial. It had dark humour, sexual innuendos, adult jokes and shock value.
Yeah, and I think I didn't really like it because it was quite gross. You know, yeah. Eyeballs would pop out and they'd always have like a snotty nose and it's I didn't get it.
Well, they'd be scratching their balls. Am I right?
I think they were scratching their body parts, one of the testicles, and I don't know. But yeah, probably that's where you got the kind of the Simpsons-esque kind of double-edged humour, I guess.
Yeah. Because
a child wouldn't know what they were doing, but an adult probably would.
Yeah.
I just thought it was a gross TV programme when I was a kid.
It was weird, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I remember watching it.
Because eyes always pop out and be veiny and throbby and...
Yeah. Another one for our listeners that should get on to YouTube, the song Happy Happy Joy Joy.
Okay.
That was weird. Like they were like smashing each other over the head singing this song. It was weird. So weird. We had last episode's guest, Vicky. She chimed in with Animals of Farthing Wood.
Yep.
A classic, but dark as fuck.
Yeah, it's... For all those reasons we've said before, and definitely those that that Vicky mentioned, it's just we remember it for probably all the wrong reasons.
On Twitter, we've got Brad Sked, who again has featured on previous episodes from Strong Island Records.
Ah, shout out to local shop owners and brands.
He said, "Rocco's Modern Life," "Ren and Stimpy," Attack of the Killer Tomatoes.
I don't remember that one.
Do you remember that one?
No.
And Rugrats were all bangers. Yeah. Just a bit of an insight on some of these cartoons. So Rocco first aired on the 29th of October 1992 and came to an end on the 24th of November 1996.
That was on a similar vein to Ren and Stimpy, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a bit more sort of simple, I guess.
Yeah.
52 episodes and was made up of 100 segments. Rocco is a wallaby who has moved from his native Australia to the United States. But life in the United States isn't as idyllic as he had hoped it would be, and he is surrounded by annoying neighbours, tons of laundry, and life issues in general. I remember Killer Smiles. I thought it was weird, and it didn't actually last that long, Alex. First aired on the 8th of September 1990, and the final episode aired on the 23rd of November 1991.
I don't recall it.
Two seasons, 21 episodes. It was on Nickelodeon, if I recall.
Oh, okay.
When I saw it. Attack of the Killer Tomatoes is an American animated television series based on the 1978 film Attack of the Killer Tomatoes and its 1988 sequel Return of the Killer Tomatoes. Have I piqued your interest?
No.
Yeah, don't bother.
Mm.
Next up, we got Chris. Batman, the animated series.
Oh, brilliant.
And I presume he's talking about the Mark Hamill as the Joker.
Yeah.
This first aired on the 5th of September 1992, and the final episode aired on the 15th of September 1995.
Interesting facts for you, Dan. They have recently remastered it.
Have they?
And released it on Blu-ray.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
I never watched it.
Worth a pickup. Have you not?
No.
But have you seen it as an adult?
No, I haven't.
Mate, it's brilliant.
No.
It's really good. I mean, it's based in, I think it's Art Deco, late 40s, 50s type style. Well, Gotham. But it's so good.
I struggled with DC as a kid, which is probably why I always loved Marvel more.
Yeah.
And that's always sort of stuck with me growing up. That doesn't mean I don't like DC now, and I probably could go and watch the Batman TV series.
Oh, I would. Just as a standalone, it's so well illustrated. Mm. It's dark, but the action scenes are brilliant. They're so, so good. So definitely go and check it out.
Give it a blast.
It's such a good suggestion by, was it Chris you say?
Yes.
Yeah, such a good shout.
So this actually spanned across 85 episodes over 4 seasons. This animated series conveys the dark mood of the original Batman comic books. Unlike the light-action Batman show of the 1960s, Gotham City's caped crusader Bruce Wayne is sometimes moody, and Robin's alter ego Dick Grayson has a more mature personality than in the original series.
Yeah, it's more level-headed, and actually I think you tend to like him more as a character, whereas Dick Grayson tends to be immature, his child, and he'd be quite irritating.
Yeah.
Because he's petulant. Whereas this version, he's more of a trusted advisor to Batman. I mean, that's why we're going to have to do more volumes of this episode, because that's such a good shout. It's such a good episode. You need to see the programme, Dan. It's so good.
I can jump on board.
Do it.
So Dick Grayson, as you describe him, is he more like the guy that we've seen in Titans?
Not that mature. In Titans, of course, he goes on to be his own character's Nightwing, and he's been through the mill with Batman and Bruce Wayne. He almost sees him as an adversary, I guess. Whereas no, this one he appreciates Bruce Wayne, but also sees his faults. He is his equal partner, I guess. Not just an immature, gymnast, what he ends up usually being depicted as. It's really good.
Yeah.
Such a good, well-balanced programme.
Last up, we've got Rob. We got our first voice clip, and I mean, at the moment, he looks like he could be winning that limited edition.
That
much-coveted mug. Well, let's throw the voice clip in.
Well, hello there, my big bone little sister.
Hello, my brother.
Mama had a chicken.
Mama had a cow. Daddy was proud. He didn't care how. Cow. Chicken.
And don't forget Red Guy.
What a beautiful thing that is, Dan.
So whose choice was Cow and Chicken, which was on Cartoon Network?
Yep.
Do you ever watch Cartoon Network?
Again, in my latter childhood years when we got Sky.
Yeah.
As such, I think I missed the boat on that.
Home of Dexter's Laboratory.
Yeah, yeah.
Powerpuff Girls.
Didn't get it.
Cat Dog, or was that Nickelodeon?
Nickelodeon, I think Cat Dog was.
Yeah, no, I'll tell a lie. I didn't really get on board with Cartoon Network that much.
That's some great Flash games though on PC.
Yeah.
On the website.
I mean, I did watch Cow and Chicken now and again. First episode aired on the 15th of July 1997, and it came to an end on the 24th of July 1999. Bit of a synopsis for you, Alex. The series focuses on the misadventures of two unlikely yet somehow biological siblings. The sweet-natured, dim, ecstatic Cow and her cynical older brother, Chicken, both voiced by Charlie Adler. The two are often caught in escapades with their flamboyant enemy, the Red Guy, also voiced by Adler, who disguises himself under various personas to attempt to scam them. Huh. I mean, the red guy was almost like a take on the devil, but
right.
Something you can't really sort of get away with when you're giving kids cartoons.
No.
It was a weird one. Like, Cartoon Network had some weird stuff on there.
They did. But I seem to think that the Canned Chicken did quite well. Again, it stuck around for a while, so not a lot of people quite liked it.
They did.
Hmm.
But that is it for our listeners.
Well, it is for the episode, but we've got some contact details to give out and also the end of our competition rundown.
Yes, indeed. So we are on Facebook at The Weekly Roundup with Alex and Dan. We are on Twitter at @hello_twrad, Instagram at @hello.twrad, and there is Gmail, hello.twrad@gmail.com. But if you want to be in for a chance to win that most coveted limited edition one-off mug, you can leave us a voice message.
You can, yeah. So in the link below, navigate yourself to Anchor, where we distribute and host our lovely, time-relevant, delicious podcasts.
Mm.
They shout out to those guys who've been bought out by Spotify. They are brilliant. You can leave us a voice message and be in for the chance of winning that mug. For reasonable post-and packaging, we will actually be cost-free, send it out to you just in time, hopefully for Christmas.
Merry bloody Christmas.
Indeed. So, yeah, the best voice message will win that mug. It could be on comments on a previous episode. It could be setting us homework. Mm. It could be a comment, a disagreement, endorsement. It could be anything. But get in contact, let us know, and we will judge your voice message accordingly. You'll be part of the show.
Absolutely. Get involved. We've had voice messages in the past.
We have, and we always like to encourage people to get involved and get in contact. So please do, and end the year with a glorious mug of yours truly slapped on the side.
Well, in the new year, we'll be looking at our most anticipated for the year, so that could be a good one to get involved in as well.
It is, yeah.
I've got lots of stuff coming up next year, Alex, that I'm excited to share with our listeners.
Like what?
I'm afraid there's a couple that were on my list last year that are going to be making this year, so it could be interesting. Firstly, okay. Angels and Airwaves.
Oh, right, yeah. Oh, yeah, because that was pushed back, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yep.
Had a couple of singles this year, so it's something to look forward to. And Natives, they still never dropped that album this year.
They never did, today.
No.
Naughty, naughty.
But yeah, we'll see what happens.
We will.
But that's it. That's it for another episode. An absolute mammoth. About 1 hour 20.
An absolute cork of a gem.
Mm. I've been Dan.
I've been Alex.
And we'll see you next time.
Time?
Yeah, let you go.
Let me go. What, we no longer together? Or?
Oh, no. I thought you were just going to go. Chime around, this one goes. Oh, it's that one, is it? Next up, we got Chris. Anime. Up next, we've got Chris. Batman, the animated series.
Oh, bro.